Hey everyone, this is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Nick White, and this week I am joined by two amazing people, Rene Rodriguez.
Bueno.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hey.
First off, I want to point out that this is our 150th episode. I think we've actually done more. I don't know if that's counting minisodes and non-numbered episodes, at which point we've done even more, so that's fantastic. But numbered-wise, 150. That's pretty amazing. I think everyone can agree. Beyond that, I want to point out that the reason you're hearing my voice is because Mike Rappin, Kara Szymborski, Tia Vasiliu, Xander, and Paul, Jaisley as you know him, are all at Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle. They've been there since Thursday and are having a great time by all accounts. So that's why you're hearing me, and you'll probably hear more about that in the future. The last thing I want to just quick go over is the fact that we have a new Goodreads book for March. We'll be reading Silver Surfer Volume 1, New Dawn, written by Dan Slott and drawn by Mike Allred. And we also have a new Goodreads poll at the moment. Who is the most villainous of the villains? Actually, that's not a poll. I think that's just a thread.
Yep.
but we have polls too. We'll talk about that more later. Anyway, all of that out of the way, let's talk about what we've been up to, what we've been reading. What about you, Renee? What have you been up to? What have you been reading? Anything and everything else involving you, I'm all ears.
Wait. Let me guess. I'm going to forecast that Renee's been reading manga.
That's a good guess. That's a really fucking good guess. That's what I'd go with.
I'd be hurt, but you're right. So, it's not that I don't like reading normal comics. It's just that, you know, manga are always there for me and they're really good.
And they're really cheap.
Kind of. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, I remember when you were like, what's this one where it's like, hey, this is 150 pages and it's $2.
By chapter, it is really
Shonen
cheap.
Jump?
Shonen Jump. What is it? Shonen Jump.
Jesus Christ. Yes, that's it.
You can just say Jump for short, like all the cool kids do.
I was gonna say, fill me in on the fucking lingo so I can be like, yeah, you read Jump?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, no one calls it that. Who told you this? And then I'll be like,
I'm trying to envision any cool kid reading manga.
How dare you?
Oh shit. Anyway, we won't be talking to Kate this week. I guess it's just me and Renee and
oh god. You know, if the weeaboos aren't saying, have you read Jump, then I am so out of it. But I think they are, so we're good. Diving right in, though. So this week, I actually did pick up some manga from my local comic book store. I picked up Hikaru no Go, Volume 8 and 9 by Yumi Hata and the fantastic Takeshi Obata. Not that Yumi Hata isn't fantastic, because she is. She's so good. Hikaru no Go, by the way, is a manga about a board game. And it's amazing. It's so good.
Sure. I mean, Renee, we've been over this before, but Renee will like list off this huge title and all these massive people, and then he'll be like, this one's about table tennis. And it's like, I don't know if you're fucking
really
with me
good.
At this point, Renee. I don't know.
No, Hikaru no Go is actually one of my favorite manga of all time. It's really good. The art is insane. And despite the fact that it's about a board game, it is incredibly serious, and it also has just fantastic moments. Randomly, I will reread through this series and rant about it on Twitter, and most of my rants are about Hikaru no Go because it's so good. It's amazing.
Okay, that's fair.
Other than that, I also read a lot of Toriko, which is by Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. That's a mouthful, but it's fun to say. But Toriko is also kind of weird, and it's a book my best friend told me to read, and I'm still getting through it. And it's about a food hunter, and that's really all I can
say. Food hunter?
Yeah, he goes and he searches out for, you know, really kind of gourmet foods. You know, he goes and hunts animals and looks for special plants that can be made into better food and all that. It's really weird.
Okay.
It's one of the weirdest series I've ever read in my entire life. And there's no real way to even...
That actually has real weight to it, Renee, so I'll take your word when you say that this one, you know, stands out amongst the pack in terms of its weirdness.
It's so weird. And the thing was, I couldn't even get into it at first. Like, my friend tried to show it to me like 3 times and I just couldn't get into it. And then it slowly picked up and you know, I kind of want to get through it. I'm almost at the end, but I'm still got like, I think almost 100 chapters left in it.
100 chapters? Holy cow.
Yeah, well, I'm at 300-some. So, like I said, I'm at volume 35, I think. So, you know, it's a trip. And then
it's like a lot, Renee. Do you buy this digitally or physically or?
Digitally. I do it digitally. Okay. And if the series is good, I will buy it physically. Like I have, I bought like 40 manga volumes last year. If that is any indication of how much money I spend on these. And then also the last thing that I read was the newest chapter of Berserk by Kentaro Miura.
Is that Fist of the North Star? Am I totally pulling this out of nowhere? Is that similar or the same?
They came out around similar times. Berserk is a dark power fantasy, and it came out around the time of Fist of the North Star, and it kind of broke all the molds though. Berserk is the ultimate dark fantasy manga, and it's been around for like 30 years, and it's such a good story, but it is super dark. I am really wary to tell anyone to read it because it is incredibly depressing. Bad things happen in Berserk.
I'll put it on my list right now, Renee. You've sold me. Dark power fantasy. Yes, please.
Bad things happen and only bad things happen. Only bad things happen in Berserk. But it's
that's
really
a pull
good.
Quote. That's a pull quote. Only bad things happen. Well, you know. I like this, Renee.
There's a video that I can actually throw up later, but there's a YouTuber that goes into why you should watch Berserk or read it, and he goes into really in-depth of why you should read it without doing too many spoilers, and it was what got me into the series, and honestly, I don't regret getting into the series, but just know that when I got to about halfway through it, I was depressed for a month just from this book. So.
I mean, that sounds fun. I'll pay money to get depressed. What? Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's really good. Like you know how like the Red Wedding kind of ruined a lot of people in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Times that by 30.
See, so, I bet
Renee,
this
what's
manga...
one of these books that isn't going to take years off your life? Just go ahead and, you know, just quick. Recommend one right now that's not gonna have me sit alone in the corner and have Mad World by Gary Jules play as I stare out on, you know, as the rain drips down the window pane. Is there something you can quick pitch here that wouldn't make me sad?
Yeah, probably Haikyuu.
Okay.
But you asked what I read this week, and it was Berserk. Berserk. Yeah. At this point, I'm just trying to get through the end. But it also is—it's really good. It's really good storytelling. The art's fantastic. It's just super sad. So that's it.
And this book has been around for forever, right?
Been about 30 years. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's what I read.
What about you, Kate? Have you been reading dark power fantasies that have been around for 30 years, or?
I have not. Sadly, okay. I read some number ones.
Speak
and...
for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, I feel like that was probably put out by, like, is a secret, like, way to get people to pay for psychiatry and therapy. Like, it was put out by the Psychologists Association or something, and they're like, here, like, generate some leads for us. Read this.
This is an unhealthy collusion between parties, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Kate, I could do a whole mini-sode on Berserk, so, I mean.
So... I read one disturbing thing this week. I read Imaginary Fiends number one, which is the new series by Image series by Tim Seeley. Was it Image? It might not be Image. I might have that wrong. I think it might be. Is it or is it IDW? Anyway, the point is, it's Tim Seeley, Stephen Molnar with Quentin Winter doing the colors, and I noped out of this one. I like finished the issue, but I'm noping out real hard of the series. I really like the writing by Tim Seeley, but having been traumatized by Shelob at a young age, I do not do giant spiders. And I was not aware that giant spiders were going to be in this. And this is not a spoiler. This is a warning. Giant spiders are in this. Yeah.
If arachnids trigger you, then this is
not
definitely
for me.
Not, yeah, yeah.
Not for me at all. So it is a cool series. The premise is that your imaginary friends are actually creatures from another like parallel dimension that are trying to kind of get in, and they do that by interacting with children or the mentally ill, and they like feed off the attention. And most of them are benign; they're just like normal imaginary friends. And
I was gonna
then a small portion of them are not benign, and they feed off fear and control. And so, this girl had one like that, that like had latched onto her and made her kill her friend when she was, I think, 12. And so she ends up in a psychiatric hospital for like the criminally insane. And the FBI shows up and is like, "Hey, you've been here a long time, but also we know that you're not crazy, and that you didn't really do this by your own volition or whatever. So we'll get you out of here if you come work for us. Help, because you had this thing latched onto you, you can see them, and most people can't see them. So come help us investigate cases like yours, and you can come out." So that's like the first issue is all that. So,
but it's a note.
Wow.
Her imaginary fiend takes the shape of a giant arachnid sometimes, and that's just not for me. So
I'm looking over at Kevin right here. Kevin says he would never do anything like that. He's very offended that people apparently think imaginary people do that. So.
I thought Kevin was your like dog drop... and didn't realize what you were.
What's that,
about.
Kevin? Make them pay?
No.
All right.
Yeah, if you like Drop Dead Fred, you'll be all over this one. So I also read Sleepless number one per recommendations on the show. I think Mike's talked about it a couple times now. This is the one by Sarah Vaughn with Layla Del Duca, on art. It is as promised. It was absolutely beautiful. Love the story. Great setup. Definitely following up with this one.
And okay. Then, and I think that's Image, right?
Yeah, that's definitely Image. Yeah. Definitely. Maybe not. Certain. I don't know. I'm confusing who did what. I don't have them sitting by me. But anyway, I'm fairly confident. It definitely feels like an Image book. If you like fantasy stuff, that one's for you. I also read the Image Expo Sampler, which has a bunch of like previews of their new stuff coming out.
At least we know what publisher did that one, right?
Oh. I'm real confident this one's the Image. Really
shots
confident.
Fired.
Yeah.
Nick is just so aggressive when Mike's not here to rein him in. It's like...
Yeah.
Anyway, the one that stood out to me in that was Echolands, because it has J.H. Williams on art, and his art is the best. With Hayden Blackman writing. So the Bat Boys are back. If you remember, these guys did Batwoman for New 52. And then they peaced out when DC was like, "You can't have a lesbian wedding." And they were like, "Okay, bye, bitches."
Well, I think part of it was also the fact that I don't think, and like J.H. Williams, if you listen to this, you can, sorry, J.H. Williams III, if you listen to this, you can correct me, but I don't think he does a super great job at meeting month after month after month after month of deadlines. So I bet you he probably had like all of his issues queued up for the New 52. Before it even started. Because when you look at his style, you know that he probably
does, yeah. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with why they peaced out. They broke contract over that. That was a whole thing. But anyway, the colors are by Dave Stewart, letters by Ted Klein. It's playing with myth and mythic fiction. It's about a world that doesn't remember its myths, and a young girl has to figure them out and fight against a wizard and so on and so forth. She's called the Hood, and it seems like from the preview pages that it's like playing into the Red Riding Hood myth. But which normally would not attract me at all. What's cool about
but
this
but no one's ever done that before,
art.
Kate.
You know what? These retellings, like, you know what? I get, like, the whole point of myths is that they're retold and transform over time. Like, I'm not against it. It just gets a little tired after a while. But the art is so beautiful. If you like J.H. Williams style art, which I do. So I will definitely be picking this one up.
If you don't, get the fuck out.
Yeah, right? What are you doing? And then I also read Star Wars Volume 5, Yoda's Secret War, because what I actually did was got Screaming Citadel in a sale. And then Nick was like, oh, you've read Star Wars Volume 5, have you? And I was like, no, I haven't. And he's like, well, then you're reading shit out of order. And that's why you have to have friends. I did also say
at that point, it's probably inconsequential, but yes.
Which was also correct. But okay, see, that's the reason you need comic book reading friends, because friends don't let friends read shit out of order. good looking out. That's a
bumper sticker right there.
Yep, yep. So this is the Jason Aaron series, just the title series with Salvador La Roca and pencils. And talk about a tangent. Holy crap. They, like, we start out with C-3PO's been kidnapped, and you're like, something's going to happen with that, right? And they're like, LOL, nope. And then they're like, we can't go rescue him. He's just a droid. And R2-D2's like, whatever, I'm stealing an X-Wing. I'll do it myself, bitches. And then you're like, something's going to happen with that, right? And they're like, LOL, nope. I would assume they pick up those threads in Volume 6, but yeah. So then the rest of it is just all flashback from Ben Kenobi's journals that Luke's reading, because he's like, well, can't go anywhere because the droids took off, so I'm just going to read this journal. And it's all about this side adventure that Yoda had one time on this planet we've never heard of, which was fun. Like, I enjoyed reading it, but like, Nick did preface his, you should read this first with, but you probably don't need to. And that was correct. it also has the second annual at the end of this trade, annual number 2 for, this is the Kelly Thompson one with Emilio, how do you pronounce that one? Liso?
I think it's just Liso, yeah.
Okay, on pencils. I didn't really care for it. I don't know, the story was good. I'm not a fan of that art. Like, any Star Wars art that gets too cartoony or too, has difficulty. Stylized. Yeah, it's not even stylized. Has difficulty with action poses, which this definitely had trouble with. Really throws me out of the story. And that is personal preference. I'm not saying it's bad. So it just wasn't for me. But the main story was great. So that was pretty much my reading for the week. How about you, Nick?
Well, you know, speaking of Star Wars, I also did some Star Wars reading. And I also did some that was also drawn by Emilio Liso.
Oh, what are your thoughts?
Like, here's my thing, is that it's, first off, like, any artist who willingly takes on a project where they're having to portray likenesses of real people.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know, a tip of the hat to them. That's tough.
Yeah.
That being said, I think I appreciate visual styles more when they're stylized to a point that, like, I can still recognize, not to a point, like, I appreciate it where it's stylized, but I can still clearly recognize who's who and there's not any guesswork involved. But I like that more than the very, like, realistically oriented artists that, like, get Luke 90% and then, like, miss the, like, 10%. So it enters the uncanny valley moment where it's like, this is borderline Luke perfectly, but something is off and this is going to bug me for the rest of the comic. I will take the stylized over the, you know, 85% close enough Luke any day for the most part. So
that's understandable.
Yeah. So I read that. It was written by Jodi Hauser, who, as some people know, is sort of an up-and-coming writer. She's recently written Faith for Valiant. She's also writing Mother Panic and the Mother Panic Gotham whatever that's coming up for Young Animal. And so it was interesting. Because with something like this, you always wonder if they're going to go beat by beat and just recreate the story. I was kind of interested in this because I had heard whisperings that Hauser had been given access to certain information that allowed her to supplement the story based on extra stuff from... who was this? This one was Gareth Edwards, right? I think it was, directing. And so I was kind of in for that because everyone always complains, oh, Rogue One wasn't fleshed out, characters weren't fleshed out, they weren't anything more than two-dimensional, to which I say they had one movie to introduce a bunch of people. Tough shit, I love this movie. Hit me up on Twitter, we'll talk about it. Just kidding, don't. I don't handle confrontation well.
Sorry, that was so good.
That being said, I'd never heard of Lyso before, but apparently, as Kate pointed out, he drew that annual, and he's also currently drawing Dr. Aphra. He's been drawing Aphra since November.
Oh, so I haven't... Volume 2 of Aphra is on my list after Screaming Citadel. I didn't know he did that one.
Yeah, in fact, he might even not even... That might not even be until 3. I'm not certain. Oh. Someone else would know. But Hauser mainly sort of covers it beat for beat, re-edits a couple story points. There's a couple spots, obviously, in the movie where you have flashbacks, and she shuffles a couple of the flashbacks around into different positions. It's a good streamlining of the film. Beyond that, it doesn't really supplement that much, unfortunately. Again, I do like Lyso's art. I think he sort of has a more stylized take, but it's fine. The book also comes with the Cassian K2SO one-shot written by Dwayne Swirinski, I think. Might have that last name totally wrong. Writing and Fernando Blanco on art. This was really stylized. And you get to see sort of an earlier story about basically how Cassian meets K2SO. Really enjoyed that. Would have liked more of that. Maybe we'll get more of that. I don't know. I also read Dark Knight's Metal 4 and Doomsday Clock number 2. Yes, for those listening, you are correct. Both of those books are respectively on one newer issue each than those, but I'm behind. Surprise. I coupled them together to talk about briefly because Metal I had very high expectations for because it's a Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo team-up. Well, duh. What do you want? And Doomsday Clock, of course, is Geoff Johns attempting to drag Watchmen, kicking and screaming, out of its original, largely standalone graphic novel and attempt to smash it into the DC universe. Not unlike, oh, you got your chocolate and my peanut butter, oh, you got your peanut butter and my chocolate, that whole shebang from the 80s, if anyone remembers that. And surprisingly, Metal is not that good. Honestly, it's too text heavy. It's a big mess. It's just unwieldy with poor pacing. It can't be read monthly, and I don't think trade weighting it is going to save it. Doomsday Clock, on the other hand, Geoff Johns has actually found a very good, streamlined, clean, and clear, and convincing way of explaining and reconciling how the events of Watchmen and the events of the DC canon can successfully coexist. Here's a hint. It involves multiple universes. It's a very good story. Yeah, I know. But it's really, really good. And what I like about Geoff Johns here is he is actively manipulating and fucking with people, especially those who really love Watchmen, because he's playing off of their expectations for where things are going to go and how characters are going to act. So there's that. Briefly, one or two other things here. I read Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, or actually I haven't quite finished it yet. For those who are aware of the team of writer Mark Waid and artist Chris Samnee, you're probably more aware of their work on Daredevil, which wrapped a few years ago, or their very brief work recently on Captain America, which of course is now being taken over by Ta-Nehisi Coates and Lentil Yu, I believe. But that being said, they actually teamed up all the way back in 2012 to do an IDW four-part miniseries with Jordy Belair on colors of The Rocketeer. And for those who say, well, what is The Rocketeer other than some really, you know, evocative and smart art deco designs with a jetpack, to which I say, fuck you, that's enough for me. Give me some action shots of that thing rocketing through the air, I guess, and fighting Nazis. That's enough. A fun book. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And for those who aren't familiar with The Rocketeer, you might want to read the original by Dan Stevens first. But it's by no means unapproachable. That's what I've been reading. Other than that, I've just started the first volume of the original Quantum and Woody. Written by Christopher Priest, drawn by M.D. Bright, and they're widely known as doing the quote-unquote best or most famous arc of Black Panther. But that's been it for me. With that, we will turn to our picks of the week. Comic books come out on March 7th, 2018. We'll start this with Kate. Kate, what book are you looking forward to? You stole my pick, you son of a bitch.
I got there first. This is what comes with being prepared and on top of things. I knew that I was going to make it through the show, everyone.
Like, it's not going to happen. Like, this escalation is way too strong.
Yeah, I was looking through my shops, like, what was coming out this week, and I saw this, and I was like, oh, that's what I'm most excited for. And that's definitely going to be what Nick's most excited for, too. Jeff Lemire. So, wait, did we decide it's Lemire or Lemire? Lemire, okay. We caught that one. It's fine.
Got it.
Okay, so this is Gideon Falls, number one, with Andrea Sorrentino on art, and there's a variant cover out there by Jock, if you want to look at that, too. And Dave Stewart on colors. I am super excited for this. It is about, how would you describe this, Nick?
We don't know a lot at this point because it is intentionally a mystery.
A mystery, right. It's a real mystery. Anytime you're like, throw that out there and like with the kind of horror-y bent, I'm like, get revival vibes. I love me some revival. So... it also is being tagged as like character driven, which is another key word that I like to hear. Does Jeff Lemire ever write bad stuff? I don't think
so. Fun editing around this, Xander. Yes, he does, and it's called Justice League United.
Oh, I didn't read that.
So question answered, but yes. Beyond that, no, everything else is stellar.
Yeah, I've never read anything
I
didn't like.
And I can't speak
to
Old Man Logan, but aside from that, yeah. No, I'm really excited for this too. People have drawn comparisons with what little we know to Twin Peaks and True Detective, the good season. so
I think you mean the only season.
Yeah. Like some of the descriptions and like... stuff I was seeing gave me like X-Files vibes, so it's all fun falling into the wheelhouse of things Kate enjoys. So as long as there's no giant spiders,
I wouldn't rule that out, honestly.
Yeah, no thanks.
What about you, Renee?
Okay,
what are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to a plethora of things, but the main thing is the next chapter of The Promised Neverland, and that is chapter 77. And The Promised Neverland, surprise, is a manga. It's written...
What?
How long is the chapter, Renee, roughly?
That's about 20 pages. It's 18 to 20 pages.
Okay, so roughly. An issue. Yeah.
They're roughly the same size. You just get more books if you apply to Jump, you know, which you can do on Comixology. Wink, wink. Anyways, Promised Neverland, stories by Kaiyu Shirai, and the art is by Posuka Demizu. And The Promised Neverland is about a group of children who are all very intelligent, and they live on this like farmland and they all have the same mama, even though they're all not. They all have the same mother figure, even though they're clearly not related. And they're all like learning things and becoming smart until they get adopted, and then slowly but surely they find out that they're not actually getting adopted, and that they're actually being raised as cattle for monsters that eat humans.
I mean,
Renee, why do you read these things?
It's so good, though. This is honestly.
Is that what they say when they eat the people too, Renee?
It's
so good, though.
We've only seen them eat one human, so I don't remember.
We weren't allowed to run around and play because they said it made us too tough and gamey.
Yeah.
No, they want them to run around, but the main thing is that, like, because the brain is
this kid is grass-fed.
The brain is, like...
free range.
Yeah, free range kids. Sorry, Renee. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I don't even... whatever. It's fine. I don't know why I come up with
this
stupid
So show is this anyway. Is this book really... Does it handle this with a humorous approach, or is this one also very...
No, it's
dark and brooding.
It's a bit of both. It's not. I wouldn't say that it's comical. It is very serious, but the kids are very intelligent, so they're thinking out of how to escape their predicaments. And it's actually very. Okay. It's more of a mind battle kind of thing. So it's very interesting to see how the kids figure out, you know, that the world that they live in isn't what it seems, and then also seeing them take their next steps. And again, we're only 77 chapters in, so it's still a very young series. And this is one of the series that has quickly been jumping to the top of Shonen Jump. And it's incredibly interesting. It's a really good book. I would suggest it to anyone that likes kind of like thrillers and suspense kind of thing, because you really are on the edge of your seat. And it's very intellectual. There's more mind battles than physical battles than anything. And it's sort of shows, it goes along with that whole human survival type feeling. And the arc that we're going through.
Shit's all the rage these days, right?
Yeah, so. It is. And the arc that we're in right now is finally, without giving too many spoilers, but we're finally starting to see the humans basically fight back against they call them demons. So they're finally sort of fighting back against them. And it's very exciting, and I really can't wait to see what's going on, especially since we know a lot more now than we have in the past of this series, which is kind of weird to say, because the series is also really, really short, but it feels dense without like really drowning you down in language. So it's a really good book.
It just blows my mind when you're like, this is a new series. Okay, how many chapters? 77. Okay. And they're finally getting around fighting back. Like, do you know what the average American audience would handle it if you're like, don't worry, in 76 more issues, the people aren't going to lay down and take it anymore. So just buckle in.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that, like, you know, these chapters are released weekly, you know, instead of monthly. And so when they're actually released here, or like when they're released in their trade form or whatever, you get about 8 or 10 chapters per volume. But like so you can read through them really quickly. So I mean,
manga also just reads a lot faster. Like it has less words. So like for me, reading a volume of manga, like a normal one that you get at Barnes and Noble, takes me like 10 minutes, whereas a normal comics trade takes me an hour.
And I'm not saying this is good or bad art, from what little I know about manga, the visual density of processing a page doesn't seem...
Well, they're also much smaller pages.
Yeah, exactly. Renee, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I am curious. Do most Japanese readers, I guess it's not just Japanese, but is manga strictly Japanese? Jesus.
Manga is, yes. They have different words for it in other countries. China, that's what I thought.
Okay,
Korea,
good.
In China and Korea, it's called manhwa, and manga is the Japanese term for it.
We are just learning left and right over here. This is fantastic. do you know if most of them prefer to read digital, or do they read physical?
Well, in Korea, they have webcomics, and that's mostly where they read the manhwa, is they're mostly posted digital, and they're mostly posted on sites and all that. And you can actually get apps for your phone to read more manhwa. And I don't really know.
Yeah, I just sort of figured when you see the pictures of everybody on the packed subway train with their phones out, I was thinking, like, I wonder if everyone's reading digital, because it looks like no one has the room to whip out a book. So, interesting. Well, for me, now that Kate stole my pick.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll just briefly mention another book, because why not shine a light on something else while we're at it? What's really weird is I actually had 3 initial books to decide from, all of which were written by Jeff Lemire. Very bizarre, but it happened. Of course, the first was Gideon Falls. The second is the fact that his Black Hammer now has its second spinoff in Dr. Star in the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows. But the book I just want to briefly bring up is Bloodshot Salvation #7. This is a book he's been writing for a while now, back when it was also Bloodshot USA and Bloodshot Reborn. But with this iteration and with this specific issue, we actually have Jeff Lemire also drawing this issue. But that's going to probably be not that difficult, because this issue is going to be told in pitch black darkness. I don't know if this is an attempt to spin having to meet a deadline a little bit quicker than one thought. It brings to mind the fact that Justice League in the 80s was trying to meet a deadline, if I remember this correctly, and they found a way to do it by having a massive snowstorm, and so they basically didn't have to draw anyone, and they just drew text bubbles. Oh, they're fighting. Yep, you can clearly tell. So this will be interesting. It's Jeff Lemire, so I don't think it's a gag. I think it's going to be something that should be pretty interesting as Bloodshot goes into the dead side to try to find a cure for his daughter. But he's also been blinded. We'll get back to this when I actually read it. I've seen some of the pages. It does actually look like pitch black darkness with word bubbles. So we'll see. But like I said, it's Lemire. I don't think this is going to be some deadline-driven stunt. I think he's actually got something more creative, boundary-shattering in mind. One can hope. All right, well, before we start the topic for today, there's just a little bit of housekeeping left. I want to just briefly mention that we have a Q&A episode that will be happening on May 16th, and in regards to that, we are eagerly anticipating your questions for that episode. I believe Paul and myself will be on it, so ask away, and we'll do our best to answer those questions. With that in mind, let's go on to today's topic, which is comfort comics. That would be books and creators that you turn to ease your troubled mind. So they're like comfort food in comics form, possibly not down to the point where you actually are digesting said books. If that's the case, I think you have pica, which means you have an unbelievable desire to eat inedible things. I know that because I am on WebMD way too goddamn much. So, all of my foibles aside, what do you guys think about these comfort comics? Do you guys have any that come readily to mind? Do you have pica? Let's field all comers at this point. Renee, what about you?
I'm sorry. I do not have pica.
That's a relief.
The thing is, it's funny though, because pica to me just means hot. Because like my cousin, when he was young, when he would eat something that was too hot, he would just go pica, 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 because it just meant hot, 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 hot in Spanish. So he would just say that.
I just thought
mom.
He liked Pokemon.
No. Okay. Pica means hot in Spanish, or picante means spicy. So if you read that on your paste salsa, that's what that means. Anyway, my cousin would just say pica all the time to his mom if it was too spicy, so that's what that made me think of. Anyways, yeah, I guess I do have comics that I have trades and volumes of comics, and I'd like to reread them all when I can, but I guess that there are some that I go to really so that just always make me feel good. And actually, one of them was the comics...
Bustin makes me feel good, but...
Bustin?
Sorry.
Or Boston?
It's from the Ghostbusters song. Bustin makes me feel... Okay. Don't worry about it. Deep cut.
Deep thought.
From Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Anyway. Sorry, Renee.
Anyways, one of the one of the books that actually is my comfort one is one that I read this week, actually, to prepare. And that is, of course, Hikaru no Go, which is the manga about a board game. It's about this kid, Hikaru, who has no interest in this board game Go that his grandpa plays, and then he's just sort of rooting around his grandpa's attic for stuff to sell to get spending money to buy, like, video games and stuff, because he's a little
Wait,
shit.
Wait, is he selling his grandpa's shit?
Yeah.
Is grandpa alive at this point?
Yeah.
Is this theft?
Yeah, he's a little shit at the beginning of the story. And actually,
what the hell?
He's kind of a little shit all the way through. But he ends up coming across this Go board.
Real character arc.
Yeah. He ends up coming across this Go board in his grandpa's attic, and he sees that it's stained with blood and tears. And so he then realizes that the tears are from a ghost that is haunting the board and is crying over it. The ghost then starts haunting Hikaru and starts teaching him how to play Go. And the series then escalates from there about Hikaru...
How does it escalate? It's already there, like, done deal.
This, like, happens, by the way, in the first, like, 3 pages of the first volume.
Like, I'm going to haunt you. Oh, please, God, no.
No.
Even worse, I'm going to teach you this game.
Well, because it's not even like that. Like,
no.
Like, it's like, oh, you can see my tears. That must mean that you have room in your soul to house my own. And then it just comes in, and it's like, he's like, what? And he passes out. And then it's just kind of haunting him the next day at school, and it won't leave him alone. He's like, will you shut up? Gosh, leave me alone.
I like how he won't even haunt a Ouija board. It's Go, you know? At least it's not like haunted Guess Who, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So Hikaru's like not even interested in playing Go. He doesn't even know how to play it. And then, but the ghost like starts like crying and it affects his mood when the ghost is sad or upset or something like that. So he starts to like learn about the game. because of the ghost. And then he slowly finds out that he's a natural at the game. And so then he slowly follows his progression of trying to become a professional Go player. And then there's all other kinds of things happening in the series. But
and then this just feeds into Kate's book about the imaginary friends where, you know, he's at the middle of a tournament and he's like, tell me what to do, coach. And like no one's there and everyone's just staring at him.
Actually, there's a huge turning point in the book where he tells the ghost that he doesn't, because he lets the ghost play for him for a part of the series, and then he tells the ghost,
what a little stinker.
Well, because he doesn't know how to play, and the ghost is the one that wants to play. So he's like, oh, I'll let you play because it means something to you. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
But then as he starts to learn more about it, he's like, I want to start playing. And then he starts playing against the ghost, and they start like basically getting stronger together and all that. And but it comes to this point where the ghost actually decides that it's basically fulfilled everything in its life, and it heads to heaven, and it doesn't tell the kid. And so Hikaru actually spends like about 2 volumes going around Japan looking for the ghost because he's, you know, suddenly lost his friend and mentor.
This is making me real sad now, Renee.
It's a really powerful arc, and it's super, super, because like he even says, he's like, I'm not going to play Go anymore until the ghost comes back, because I was being selfish. The ghost's whole life was about playing this game, and I was selfish taking it away from him. And then he finally plays one game with his friend and realizes that the way that he plays is the way that the ghost plays, because that's where he learned. So he's like, the ghost is alive in the way that I play, and he starts like crying. It's a really beautiful moment, and I'm getting really emotional thinking about it.
It's not just you, Renee. Jeez,
it's a really beautiful moment. And then the art in this book, I'm not even joking, is amazing, because the artist Takeshi Obata is the artist that drew Death Note.
Oh, okay. See, even I know what that is.
Yeah, Kate, do you know what Death Note is?
I love the movie.
Of course.
How dare
I'm just kidding. You? I'm just kidding. Right? I've never seen it. I just knew that was the perfect thing to say to anyone because it was gonna just light a fire underneath you.
Well,
this book definitely doesn't sound like it's a no-go.
No, it's a really like good. It's honestly my favorite series. It's my favorite manga series. I reread it literally almost every year, and it's so good. It's one of my favorite. It's my favorite series of all time. And Takeshi Obata actually does another series called Bakuman, and he does it with the writer of Death Note, Tsugumi Oba. And Bakuman.
Did that get a movie as well?
Yes, but in Japan.
Okay.
But Bakuman is super meta because it's about manga writers.
Oh, okay. So I know this one. Mike loves this book so much.
It's because it's so good. So it's like a behind the scenes of what happens in their industry. And so honestly, if you're even like a little bit curious of how all that works, read Bakuman because it is fantastic. It's really good. And also,
it's so interesting to me that books like that are so popular over there. And yet when I think of sort of an analog in America, what comes to mind are a lot of those Box Brown books, like the one about Tetris and the one about Andre the Giant, where you have this really interesting moment where you can be entertained and educated at the same point without sacrificing either. And it sounds like what's so interesting about manga is that's sort of... very typical over there, that you're learning about some obscure niche while being entertained at the same time.
Yeah, that's a theme in most manga that's tailored for younger audiences, is they teach you about the things that the story is. Like, that's kind of the thing. They didn't do it so much like in Dragon Ball or Fist of the North Star.
But I was going to say, what's the life lesson from Dragon Ball is, you know...
I think
you need to glow more and get more ostentatious hair as things go on.
Pokemon
taught me how to capture animals and make them fight for my amusement.
Yeah. Do not leave them in their natural habitat. They do not like it there.
Well, Pokemon,
they may look happy, but they are hiding it.
Pokemon was originally a game and not a manga. They made the manga because the game was so popular, and then all the anime came after.
Was that an actually?
Yeah,
I guess I never thought about
that. Yeah, it was, because, you know, I was
like, that's not a manga. Okay.
I get it. You guys are Pokemon fans. I get it. That's a whole thing. But when you're wrong,
no,
you're wrong.
We're learning, Renee. We're learning.
I can hear the tones in your voices. I'm not a moron. I hear it. I get it. Oh, it's boy. Weird. It's fine.
Now we've upset Renee.
I enjoy it, so it's all good. But yeah, but
Go is Chinese checkers, right? Am I completely off on that?
Yes.
It's like Chinese chess, right?
Yes and no.
Like it's more of a strategy game than checkers is?
It is a strategy game. It's a capturing stones game. So the whole point is you have two stones, black and white, and they go against each other. And the whole point is you're trying to surround each other's territories on the board. And it is a strategy game, and generals both in China and Japan and even later in Korea used it to sort of simulate battle strategies.
Right. The whole point I think they said it's even harder than chess because the amount of combinations is actually drastically higher. Anyway,
it's infinite.
So that's Go. We're learning. It's
infinite. So even though they have the computer that will never lose in Go, the thing is that Go is a game that constantly evolves.
Right.
Because there's it's put on a grid and there's an infinite number of moves that can be made. And that's actually one.
So how long has this is this book done at this point, Renee?
Yeah, Hikaru no Go is over. It's been over for a couple of years.
Couple years. Okay.
So
okay.
It is interesting. It is complete. I think it's got less than 30 volumes. I think it ends
it's
like
just a little thing.
Yeah. 30. I can't tell you how many books would die to reach 30 issues. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, well it's a different way.
Yep.
It's a different way of life.
How about you, Nick?
For me, I think a lot of sort of my comfort books are Star Wars books. And that really boils down to the fact that, for better or for worse, one, like, I know the universe like the back of my hand for the most part. So, and I think familiarity is such a big part of these comfort things. It's not, you know, when I want to lay down and relax, I want to go into uncharted waters. No. It's something you know. And, of course, beyond that, I think with the Marvel books, for better or for worse, because it has streamlined things and things are more accessible and they cut some of the chaff that needed to be. But in a lot of ways, there's not that much risk or real danger involved. Like, I'm not staying up, like, worried whether or not Han Solo is going to die because, I mean, going to die within the confines of the current ongoing, I should say, because it's not going to happen, except apparently now because of Rebels, time travel is now a thing in Star Wars. Anyway, that's just a recent development, but we won't get into that.
That's no different than, like, okay, Superman's never going to truly die and never come back. Like, that's true for a lot of comics.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, the problem that is superhero death, sure. Like, no one's probably going to be gone forever except whichever version of The Flash was actually gone for 30 years or whatever. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, but we are literally talking about the fact that we're not even talking about superhero death here. Like, Han Solo is not going to die.
No, I know.
You know, Chewbacca's not going to die. And people will be like, oh, Nick, you know, and adjusting their geeky glasses down to their nose. I just want to point out that I think Dr. Aphra might not prove the case. Look, like, maybe Kieran Gillen will make me eat humble pie on this, but I believe Dr. Aphra is nearly as safe of a character as any of these other protagonists.
Superheroes.
Well, even, like, it's not quite Han and Chewbacca, right? Because they can't die due to the chronology. Yeah. But I think if you look at how popular the character Dr. Aphra is, if you look at how marketable she's become and how ubiquitous she is in the Star Wars landscape now, I think she's pretty much borderline there. I think she's going to be safe. Prove me wrong, Kieran Gillen. Prove me wrong. Actually, don't, because then I think you're going to get a lot of mean letters from a lot of upset people. But so Star Wars definitely holds that place for me. And I mean everything from the current Marvel stuff to the really old, really goofy stuff from after the movie came out and they were just sort of uncharted waters, let's do whatever we want. So those things as well. So Star Wars definitely is one of those things for me. What about you, Kate? I know I think Star Wars maybe holds a similar place for you.
Yeah, the Star Wars universe, to an extent, certain art styles, like we were talking about, just throw me out of it with Star Wars, or if the writer doesn't really nail the characters' voices, sometimes it doesn't hit that warm, fuzzy place for me if I can't really get into it, but a lot of the current Star Wars Marvel books do that for me for the same reason. It's just, you know, going back to the universe that you love from childhood Star Wars watching and reading and all that. I don't really reread comfort comics. Like, I do for books. I have certain books that I'll read over and over when I'm, you know, it's exam week or something bad has happened in life or whatever. But I typically only reread comics when I want to read the next issue or volume and can't remember what happened in the last one. Do a lot of that kind of rereading. Yeah. But I do go back to and have bookmarked certain, like, web comics that are funny that cheer me up. So, like, my favorite is Poorly Drawn Lines, and I have, like, printed collections of them, too, that I'll reread. And XKCD is another favorite of mine. And then, not so much lately, like, they live in my parents' house. I don't even have them with me. But I used to, as a kid, go back to and reread comic strips that were favorites of mine for, like, cheer-up purposes. Like, Calvin and Hobbes and Peanuts were my two favorites. So I think that kind of thing. But...
yeah.
Honestly, like, when I think, like, comfort, like, I think of, like, oh, to make you feel better, and then I think comedy. So, like, Poorly Drawn Lines falls into that for me.
Yeah, and I think there's a real easy inclination to go to comedy, and I don't think that's necessarily, like, true for everybody, but I think on some level that's also true for me with some things. Like, I really enjoy Rocky and Bullwinkle on occasion, or even Uncle Scrooge. For those who aren't aware, IDW does have a limited license with some Disney comics, and it's a lot of the Disney comics that were printed in, like, the 70s and the 80s over in Europe that we really never got. And so I really enjoy a lot of that stuff. It's episodic. No one's really going to get hurt. Nothing devastating is going to happen. It's just a limited adventure, and you just go through it, and it's not really high stakes, and I think that's probably one of the more defined elements. There are definitely certain things that I do not read when I'm trying to, like, calm down, for sure. I usually always am sort of reading two books at once anyway, and I've talked about this at length on the show before, but there's always something a bit weighty or maybe more cerebral or maybe more artistically engaging. And then on the side, there's something a bit lighter and easier. So there's always something ready to meet whatever mood I'm in. So anything else, Renee, that comes to mind for you?
Honestly, like, I guess I don't reread things that make me feel better, or like that. I don't really read always happy stuff for comfort comics. I just read things that I, like, just even stories that I just think are really, really good. Like, because then by the when I get to the end of it, I'm just like, oh, that was so good. I'm so glad that I reread that. Because, I mean, I hardly think that. What I was talking about, that moment in Hikaru no Go, I don't think that can be described as happy, because it was kind of sad, and most of the time when I read it, I'm in tears. Or when I reread Naruto, there's a lot of moments in that where I'm crying, but it's such good storytelling that I'm like, yes, why can't all books be this way? So,
yeah.
And I mean, that happens the same. Like, I reread Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America, or his Thor, because those are really good stories. Or even Geoff Johns' Infinite Crisis, even though Superboy dies at the end and horrible things have happened. At the end, you're like, yeah, that was definitely worth the hour I spent reading that. And you know what? Day not wasted.
Oh, go ahead.
That's just the way that I look at it. So I don't think I read things that I'm like, oh, I know that it's only happy. But, like, I definitely read things that I've already read, but, like, they're things that, you know, leave me, I guess, full is a way of saying it.
Yeah, they sort of leave you content or sated, you know. They don't necessarily have to have you rolling in the aisles and you know, laughing uncontrollably, but the sort of there's a sense of contentment that comes with it, I guess, is what you're sort of getting at.
Yeah, I would kind of compare it to the euphoria of, you know, I don't know if you guys played sports back in high school, but, like, when you have a really hard practice or a really hard game and you're finally done, there's just this wash over you, and you're just, and I think it's kind of like the same feeling. And I really, I don't know. I get that from certain books, and they're not always generally happy. But they're also not, like, super depressing. They're not, like, berserk or anything like that.
No, I definitely get what you're getting at. I'm sort of the same way. Like, I'm not a big movie rewatcher. I'm not a big book rereader. I feel like I'm perpetually in a state of being behind on anything and everything that I'm supposed to be consuming in the modern media landscape, which is a terrible perspective to have, but it's where I am. And so, like, why would I reread something? Like, I'm going to fall behind even more. But I think what happens for me the most when it comes to rereading, or the scenario in which it happens most frequently, is either it's when we, like, read a book for Goodreads or a book club sort of thing that I've already consumed, and naturally here I am reading it again, or even when, like, I recommend something to, like, Mike or Kate, or we're going to do a mini-sode on a book, and I find myself, you know, getting an opportunity to reacquaint myself with something, or especially if I've gone and recommended a book to someone, getting to remind myself why I really appreciated it the first time around, which is why I sort of feel the same way about The Valiant. Sometimes it's even less about the book's content, and it's more about the place it sort of transports you to, in terms of, like, where you were in your life or where you were in your comic book collecting. And sort of, like, The Valiant was a big deal for me because that was the first time I started buying Valiant books in singles. And so that's something that always sticks out to me, because that was probably the first Valiant hard copy single issue that I'd ever purchased. And so, you know, things like that, they bring you back to a certain time or a certain place. And so even if the book itself doesn't evoke certain emotions, the context for reading that book, sometimes getting back to that place has its own value, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I do reread books that way, not comics. And that's a big part of it for me, is, like, it reminds me of a certain time and place. And, like, there's this one series of books that I, like, flew through on vacation one time. And so it reminds me of that vacation and that setting. And it's just, yeah. Kate, you go on vacation and read books. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. That's what vacations are for, right?
How else am I going to catch up? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I also agree with Renee. Like, there's, I don't know that I purposely seek out stuff like that, but, like, a really engaging series that it just sucks you in. It takes your mind off everything else, and you're just, like, completely absorbed, is a great way sometimes to be comforted, even if it's not particularly comforting, like, story-wise or whatever. It's just a nice distraction, and who doesn't enjoy just a really good series, right? Like, that's just, yeah.
I mean, I think a good example of that for me is, like, I really enjoy Brian Wood's Alien Salvation. Like, I don't think most people would think, let's cuddle up by the fire and let's get ready to go to bed and just put my mind in a good mind space and let's read about xenomorphs putting that extendable mandible through the back of someone's head. You know,
I think you have problems.
I don't.
How is there not a punk band named Extendable Mandible?
You know, it's not like Goodnight Moon. You know, it's not like Goodnight Marines, Goodnight Flickering Light, Goodnight Xenomorph crawling on the wall, dripping slime on things. It's not really comparable, but. For me, it reminds me of playing Alien Isolation, which has the same sort of aesthetic, which probably should also invoke pants-shitting fear and terror. But it was such a good video game, and I had such a good terrifying time with it. I really should have been hooked up to a heart monitor for that game. But it sort of evokes that aesthetic, and it evokes that period. And sometimes, especially when a franchise you love or a series you love hasn't really done anything recently, sometimes you just go back and remind yourself, you know, this was a good one from that series, or this was the last thing I remember, and maybe we'll get something in the future, but for now, you know, I'm just happy to reacquaint myself with what's out there. So
yeah, I wish I had more to say. I can't really think of anything, though. I feel like we're just kind of, like, all of us are like, yeah, we don't really read comfort comics, like, so much. I don't know.
I mean, I do.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I had said everything that I wanted to say about it, other than talking about Spider-Man, but it'd just be more of the same.
Spider-Man's not comforting. It involves spiders.
Dude, Spider-Man, yeah. Spider-Man is super comforting. Spider-Man is so comforting because Peter Parker is like an average guy from a blue-collar family. And so many bad things.
He had a traumatic experience with a spider. That's the most horrifying thing I can imagine.
The thing is, there's been so much death in his life, and yet he continues to try and believe in the fact that people should do good, that there is a reason to keep striving to do good, despite the fact that there is a constant line of shit pouring on you, and that it's still worth it to be a good person and to do good and to strive to try and help everyone. And you know what? That puts a good feeling.
No, I can see going back to something like that.
That puts a good feeling in my stomach, you know?
Well, it's so rare to find like characters that are, for the most part, unyieldingly optimistic or whatnot. And I think a lot of times we criticize those characters for being simple or two-dimensional. And I think Superman frequently probably is the DC counterpart to Spider-Man in that regard. But yeah, I think people also turn to those stories or the idea that they know that that character, for the most part, won't break or won't compromise those sorts of perspectives. So I can see where you're coming from.
Even though there have been times where Peter Parker and Spider-Man have been like, I give up, I'm done. He comes back, and he comes back in such a fantastic, glorious manner that you just fall in love with it all over again. Like when he came back from being Doc Ock Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, you're like, Peter Parker is back.
Oh, God, that is so weird.
Yeah. I mean, Green Goblin's making fun of Otto Octavius, and he's like, what will you have, Otto? What will you have? Nothing. Ha 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 ha. And then Peter just goes, well, I'll have the dignity of knowing I never carried around a man purse. And then they just do that close-up on his face, and he just goes, it's you, the one and only. And I was like, yeah! Spider-Man! It was so good.
Well, it's official. I definitely want Renee reading the screenplay adaptation of that book. that's simple. That's easy. I want that now. no, that's good. I think probably the only other book that sort of comes to mind that I'll just briefly bring up here that I think too in terms of comfort reads, and it's definitely an unconventional one, but Paul Jaisley will appreciate this, is Transformers versus G.I. Joe, which is sort of a weird one because unlike Star Wars, this isn't a book that takes place in a universe that I'm super familiar with. I'm not familiar with either of the two universes very well. I can probably name about 5 G.I. Joes, and I can probably name about 2 Transformers. There's the big rig, and there's the one that's a jet, and that's about it. But that being said, there's something about Tom Scioli's book, Tom Scioli and John Barber's book, where when you look at some of the pages, it's just pure sensory overload. Like, you have these splash pages, and there's like 70, 75 characters all doing all sorts of different things on the page. And it's almost not unlike the Where's Waldo books of one's childhood, where you just enter into this like sensory overload of just slowly taking everything in. And it also makes me think of like the I Spy books as well, where you know that you can come back to this book later and open it up and find things and discover things and you know, spy things, I guess, that you never saw before. Or, you know, there's always something new, or there's always a little nuance or some little action that you didn't catch before, and there's something new to appreciate. And there's sort of a weird zen that comes with my mind being sent into that state of like, oh my God, I can't take in all of this at once. It's just overdrive for me. So there's something oddly calming about that, I guess. But I think that pretty much wraps it up for all of us, I would say. So let's go to the credits. Let's do the credits.
Thank you for listening to our show today. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Kate Scotchless.
I'm at Death Star Plans.
I am at Rodrigo29.
And the whole show is at IRCB Podcast. We retweet stuff and post polls like Santa's Comics Dad. Mike posts those. They're crazy. So if follow us to get those.
Beyond that, you can check us out at our Goodreads group, We have weekly threads. This week's thread is most villainous of the villains. Feel free to contribute your 2 cents on who you think qualifies for that title. You can also check us out at our website, ircbpodcast.com. If that's where you want to catch up on episodes, that's an excellent place to do it.
Make sure you rate and subscribe. Let us know if we're doing a good job and all that. You can also email the show at ircb@destroythesod.org.
Infinity Shred is the best. They do all our music. Xander is a wizard who edits the show and is going to make this one so great, I can tell. If you listened to this and it went well, it's because of Xander. So thank you, thank you, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
We went a little over.
How much by a little?
We ended at 37:25.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, especially when you cut out 1 or 2 minutes for padding to start the intro and all that.
We started at 55 seconds.
Yeah. So that's an extra minute. No, I think things are good.
But technically, without your second without your clean outro, we ended at 36:30. Which is still not that bad.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. famous last words. I think Xander will be happy with that.
The thing we really lost time was
Kate picked so many books.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
It's fine. This is good. Knock on wood. And then it's like, I think Xander will like this. And then it's the Ron Howard voiceover of, he wasn't.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought Nick was going to pick more books, and the fact that he didn't was like, I was like, whoa, because that's what happened last time.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have
gone through all mine, because we started talking about the Star Wars one, and then anyway.
Here's the thing, though, is that, like, other than the Star Wars one, all the books that you talked about, I was like, I want to read those. So,
I don't know, man. How do you feel about giant fucking spiders?
I actually don't mind spiders.
I think they're a staple in manga. So
I hate snakes.
I have no idea if that's fucking true.
I hate snakes.
I don't mind, but for real, like when I read after reading The Two Towers as a kid, I began having and to this day continue to have reoccurring nightmares of getting like trapped by a giant spider, like in the web, like cocooned, you know, with your like. Can't move and it's crawling towards you and it's huge. Like, nope.
Okay.
insert meme here. Nope.
Well,
yeah.
I hate my apartment then because I find spiders randomly crawling on the walls or like just slowly descending from my ceiling.
Ugh. I'm always just like, hey, what's up, dude? Really creep me out. Like, not in like a. Like, I just kill them. I mean, I'm not like. What is it, arachnophobic or something? But I do massively dislike them. But the giant spider thing is a very particular, like, I'm like, well, I'm going to dream about this tonight. Fuck you. Yeah.
I was going to say, when you said nope on that book and then you gave it such a really good, like, review, I was like, wait, why is it a nope?
Oh, Tim Seeley is the best. It is really well written. I was waiting for Nick to be like, yeah, but he wasn't as good as Tom King on Grayson.
This is the best
fight
Nick
me, Nicholas.
Yep. Took the words right out of my mouth.
I know, because I've heard this argument so many times.
Yeah.